This podcast is brought to you by Australia's LGBTQIA+ community media organisation, Joy. Keep Joy on air by becoming a member, a subscriber, or donate. Head to joy.org.au. Joy, a diverse sound for a diverse community.
This is The Informer, a Joy 94.9 podcast. This podcast was made possible with support from the Community Broadcasting Foundation. To support the production of content like this, donate at cbf.com.au.
And I guess I've got to start with the congratulations, obviously. You must be hearing that a lot, but I think it's so well deserved. It's super exciting times for you getting engaged. Can you tell me about how that all happened?
Luke and I met. I guess that's a good place to start. And we fell in love, and then he's English and his Australian visa was running out. So I decided to move to England, and then we had a fight one night, and the next day he proposed to me. So it's been a roller coaster.
It's beautiful. And you've just been announced as the ambassador for the ANZ and Sydney Gay and Lesbian Mardi Gras Community Grants Program. Where in 2019 does that importance come from? Like, why do we need these LGBTQI+ community groups?
I mean, I would hope that anything community-based is always going to be important. I feel like, you know, I think people find less importance in making the time and effort to, you know, to be involved in their communities. But community is always going to be important. And I feel like, you know, once we get to the stage where we're seeing that social media is actually making us more antisocial, we're going to realize more and more the benefit of like being physically involved and present in each of our individual communities. And we can't, you know, if there is no like funding, if there are no incentives and opportunities for these community initiatives to actually keep going, then there will be nothing for people to actually go and physically get involved in. There will be no youth drop-in centers for queer youth growing up, you know, to actually meet other queer youth, other queer teenagers. You know, there will be no local bake-offs that fundraise for, you know, the Bobby Goldsmith Foundation, for example, or, you know, like these community programs and community initiatives help with connection, help with identification, help with support. There are so many things that community is so important for that I'm absolutely guilty of taking for granted. And so that's why when this opportunity came up for me, I thought it was a really important thing to be a part of. I believed in it. And you know, I had my own experiences of, you know, using a community service as a teenager that had such a profound impact on my life that I then, you know, once I had my own platform, I've gone and been a part of other, you know, community programs, because I feel like, you know, what I was given freely is my responsibility to pass on freely.
Can we go back to 2008 and even before 2008 when you sort of came to terms and made the decision to come out and what that process was like for you?
I mean, I grew up in Brisbane and started training at the training centre that I was training at, the Elite Performance Training Centre, at the age of 11, which I guess was much too young to have, you know, really established my identity. By the time I was accepting of my identity, I'd been training with these people for like 5 hours a day, 6 days a week for, you know, a couple of years already. And so I kind of felt stuck in not wanting to open up, because I felt like I had been lying to these people who I was supposedly, you know, very close with. It felt like I'd been deceiving them by not being completely open. So I felt very stuck, and it kept me stuck in that for like, you know, a couple of years really. And so I put a wall up, and that made me feel very isolated within my training environment, which meant that I wasn't enjoying training. Like, I wasn't enjoying diving for a long time, and I didn't have any gay friends at school. I didn't really know that many gay people at all. And it wasn't until I heard through a friend of a friend of a friend about this this queer youth drop-in center that I was brought along, and you know, that's when I met other queer teens who were, I mean, across the entire spectrum of queerness, as far as, you know, sexuality, identity, just, you know, everything. But, you know, it wasn't until I that's basically where I found my first tribe. And being around people who are like me helped me to accept and be more comfortable with myself, but also being around people who are also quite openly proud of their identities really helps me to become very proud of my identity. And so that's what, you know, that's when things started to turn around, and that's when, you know, my sexuality was no longer a target for bullies. Like, I stopped getting picked on because, you know, once I was proud of it, then it's no longer a weakness. It's not something that can be picked on. So yeah, I guess that's where things changed, and turned around for me. And that was the starting, place for, you know, me actually coming out before the Beijing Olympics, because I, you know, I wanted Australia to know exactly who they were supporting if they wanted to support me. It did happen beforehand, and then I did very well. And I joked that it was potentially like I wanted to save myself an awkward coming out moment after, you know, if I, just in case I won an Olympic gold medal. And then I did accidentally win an Olympic gold medal, and I was like, I'd already done it. So there was nothing, you know, that I had to then come out again about, because I'd already done it. And it was so meaningful for me to compete authentically. And I feel like it would have actually been a burden on my shoulders to have not come out before the Olympics. And who knows, you know, if that would have affected my performance. But, you know, a nice little extra significant thing is that, you know, I became the first openly gay Olympic champion. You know, the first Olympic champion who competed as an openly gay man.
Has it been really apparent to you, the shift over the past 10, 15 years, because of the decisions like people like you made to come out in the early 2000s and mid 2000s? Like, have you seen that shift in attitudes?
Yeah, I mean, so out of the 11,000 athletes who were competing in Beijing, only 11 were openly LGBTI. There was 10 fabulous lesbians, you know, doing us proud. And then obviously, like, the only gay in the village, the only gay male, the only openly gay male, I should say. And then once London came around, that number had more than doubled to like 24 openly LGBTI. And then it almost doubled again in Rio to 40 something. So, you know, that's quite an incredible explosion. Considering that, like, I never had any openly gay role models to look up to. I never had anybody to kind of pave the way for me. I mean, there are a couple of people, but it's like, it wasn't really my hero. My diving hero, Greg Louganis, came out after he retired. You know, I did have a training partner, Matthew Helm, but he, you know, it just never came up in the media. I basically take full responsibility for that. No, I'm joking. But I do actually. No, to be in all honesty, I feel like Tom Daley has actually made, potentially have made, like, the biggest impact, because he is so widely known across the world. Like, he's got the most incredible reach. He's got millions of followers on Instagram, and his coming out on YouTube was, you know, it had the most enormous reach around the world. So, you know, it takes a couple of people to make an impact on a few others who then have their own influence. And so, you know, when they come out, they then influence their sphere. And then that's how it kind of cascades and explodes. And that's how change is created.
Thanks for listening to another Joy podcast brought to you by Australia's LGBTQIA+ community media organisation, Joy. Help us keep Joy on air. Head to joy.org.au. Joy, a diverse sound for a diverse community.